Missed an episode of Writer's Block? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on Demand. They are rewriting afternoon sports radio one word at a time. This is Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It is a Friday. This is Writer's Block. Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch. The Toronto Maple Leafs, Mr. Deitch, as I boldly predicted yesterday, having their way with the Pittsburgh Penguins. 4-0 last night.
Well, you're
Luke Fox joins us in a few minutes. I called 5-1. I was off today.
That was a hell of a prediction.
That was a good prediction. They're going to lose 4-1 to the Hurricanes.
Wow.
On Saturday.
I'll take a win there, too.
Anyhow.
Back-to-back.
One of their most complete games of the year, probably up there with the win in Nashville and the win against the Islanders. Always nice to see a player call his teammates out and then step up, regardless of the sport. That was clearly the case with Jake Muzzin last night.
You know, excuse me, I mean, one of those shows, if I'm coughing like that already.
Have you got a hairball?
It's just something's going on in my system.
That's not good, you know, like, especially this time. Something's going on in my system is not what we want to hear.
No, I understand. Trust me. It's not what I want to feel.
I need to get a mask?
What time are we at? Maybe. 3 hours with me is going to be a long time. There you go. Correct version.
Travis gave us an incorrect lineup.
Friday. Yeah, I put out on Twitter yesterday, I thought it was far and away the best effort of the season, given the opponent that they played, as well as the circumstances that had led up to that game. That was a sound and effort as I've seen from them in a long time. You had performances from players who you really, really needed to see something great from. Alex Kerfoot, I thought, played really, really well. Kasperi Kapanen had one of the games of his life, I thought, yesterday. But it really could not, and obviously Freddie Anderson, I think needed.
Oh, he was okay. He wasn't great.
Jeff, I'm not saying he was standing on his head, but just the psychological sort of benefit of getting a shutout last night, I think, will do wonders for him. So
he still won't be here next year.
It's one game, so you can't overvalue it in the same way you can't overvalue. Or I didn't think you could overvalue the Penguins' loss from a couple nights ago, but if you're a Leafs fan, you have to be feeling just immeasurably better. If nothing else, they did show you, Jeff, I thought last night, a blueprint on how you could go about beating the good teams in the league.
The problem is, it's February 21st. And I need to see that blueprint in November or December.
For sure. March.
This is the thing at this point. The problem with this team at this point is I just don't trust them.
Nor should you.
They could beat Carolina 4-0 tomorrow night. They could lose 4-1 tomorrow night. They could win 7-5 tomorrow night. I mean, it's just, I don't have an accurate read on this team yet. And that concerns me. And indeed, it should concern Leafs fans. But there were a lot of things to like last night. They went to the net. Went to the front of the net. The lineup shuffling appeared to work. I mentioned Jake Muzzin looked awfully good. And I mean, if nothing else, look, here's the thing. We've talked about what the Leafs may do, what they may not do on Monday's trade deadline. Winning last night, if that was to be followed up by a win against Carolina, in the very least you would say going into the trade deadline that the Leafs of a team have given their general manager something to think about. If they lost last night and if they had gone on to lose to Carolina, even if they lost last night and beat Carolina, I mean, I'm not saying two games are going to change what Kyle Dubas thinks of his team, because there's so much analytics involved in that decision-making process that I've got to think that, you know, that at this point, what Kyle and his folks think of their team, it's probably already cast in stone. But again, if your team plays well going up to the deadline, you do at least plant a seed in your general manager's mind. I mean, it's what the Raptors have done with Masai Ujiri. So, you know, it's what they did. Masai, if you were thinking of doing anything this year. If you were thinking of clearing the decks this year in any way, shape, or form, we just forced you not to do that.
Yeah. No, I love the fact that my favorite thing about the Toronto Raptors is they forced Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster into not making a move,
right,
which may be one of the hardest things to do.
You want to, in the very least, you want to put your general manager in a position where if he stands pat, you can go, okay.
Yeah. Thanks for the faith.
Yeah.
We're going to take it from here. The thing, though, again, and I'll sort of just keep repeating myself, you can't overvalue a singular game. But the thing that I liked just about last night, Jeff, is they played with urgency. Like, they that team, and I understand all the hockey sort of people will tell you, you cannot, you the most likely you can't keep up the intensity of playing playoff hockey in February throughout. You just can't make a run like that. And I understand that. But last night, that was a team that really played. I mean, it's very cliche, but they played with their backs to the wall, and you saw it, you saw the blueprint of what they could be, or yeah, what they can be when everybody is playing like that. They're still not a great defensive team, but they did show you, I thought, a little bit of physicality. They showed you a little bit of toughness, and they're the guys who are these high skilled forwards made some superbly high skilled forward plays. And that's what they're going to need to have any shot at doing anything.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm not buying the whole urgency argument. I know it's
You don't think that team played like they'd been called out by their
coach?
They
played very well. They played very smart. I don't know if I would call it urgency.
I would.
I think that's urgency is a cliche. You don't show urgency in February 21st.
You do when everybody's handing it to you, and you call players only meetings, and you know that like the season is falling away, given that you got an opponent right behind you, 2 points behind you. I don't know if I agree with that.
No, I tend to think that it comes down to smart decision-making more than anything else, that you outplay your opponent. I just the urgency thing, to me, there are several cliches that are used time and time again, especially in hockey. Urgency to me, when I hear someone say we're playing with urgency, that means I really have no idea why we were so good tonight. Or when we're playing without urgency, that's, I really have no idea why we didn't play well. I fail to believe that in this day and age, with all the advanced scouting and all the analytics, there is such a thing as urgency.
But you can't,
I refuse to believe it.
I understand where you're coming from, but like, you cannot, as a general rule, how many teams in any sport come to play every single night, every game of their sport? That doesn't, no baseball team goes 162-0, no football
team
goes 19-0.
That's what I mean. The urgency thing is, you know, to me, you try your hardest. To me, there are nights where your skill shines. Last night, the least one because their skilled players played better than Pittsburgh skilled players.
I mean, at a base level, but they showed far more, I don't know, energy, intensity than the Penguins. Some of that was back-to-back the Penguins. They don't have Malkin. They're not as good as they are at with a full roster, but I don't know. I mean, I appreciate you telling me that. We just disagree on urgency and athletics then, because I do think that's a motivating tool.
Yeah, I don't. I think that's a word people use when they don't know coaches use it when they don't know what's going on. To me, it's a catchphrase.
Okay.
It's an opinion.
Yeah, I
tend to think the coaching and skill and discipline and intelligence win. You know, the urgency stuff, whatever. Did the Leafs have more urgency last night, or were the Penguins tired? I don't know. Fair question.
Could be both. I don't know.
All I know is very seldom do I hear a coach say that we showed urgency in a loss. And that just kind of puzzles me.
Well, you would agree that there are. I mean, all right. So let me ask you this then: do you believe?
This is kind of a silly philosophical.
You believe in the philosophy of must-win games or no?
No.
Okay. All right. So then, me and you just fundamentally look at things differently on this one. That's fine.
Yeah. I think emotion and all that stuff, I don't think that plays as much of a role in sports as people think it does.
I think it
comes down to coaching. It comes down to tactics more than anything else, especially. You know, especially the caveat I would use is a sport like football, where you're playing one game a week. And I think that to me is the only sport that is a sport of not a sport of emotion. To me, it's the only sport where momentum really exists is football. But anyhow, I mean, that's just, but again, it's a philosophical thing. They played better last night.
They did.
Absolutely. They played better last night than they have in a long time.
Florida bailed them out again.
Losing to the LA Kings. And, I will say one thing I really liked last night. And, you know, I'm just actually, as we're talking, just watching the highlights here. One of the things I really enjoyed last night was the way there was, and I'm not necessarily talking about capping and fighting, but there was, and I don't think this is urgency, there was a little more of a stick-to-itiveness. They finished plays more. They went to the front of the net. There wasn't this, I mean, one of the things you notice with this team, and this is not an original thought, a lot of people say this, you watch this team, a lot of times guys kind of glide to the front of the net. You don't go there with a sense of, you know, I'm going to establish some presence here. And I thought they did last night. That's one thing I thought they did do. And Jake Muzzin was
great.
Was terrific.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, Jeff? I don't know. Did you happen to see the post game? So I watched the post game interviews because I think those are can at times be interesting. And Muzzin, I find, just to be an interesting guy when he answers questions. He hasn't necessarily been here long, Jeff, but it's very clear he's becoming a locker room leader. He's not afraid to speak his mind. He's sort of savvy in the way he says that this team can be a lot better than it's been. And he comes to play more often than not. And he's got Stanley Cup leadership, or Stanley Cup at least experience. So
yeah, he has the ring.
I like him. I've watching him daily. Whatever you thought he would be, however you feel about what Kyle gave up to get him, I've come to really just like him as a player. I think he's a really good player for this group.
He's an okay player. I don't think he's a top pair defenseman. I mean, he is in this team.
He's given, a top four defenseman. You'd agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm not entirely certain that he is on a team that wins the Stanley Cup. I mean, I think he's fine. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, as I said, he's clearly the best guy they have right now. You know, and this is a team that's playing without Morgan Rielly and basically playing without Tyson Barrie for the most part.
Wow. Yeah.
So I will give him that. But the takeaway, you know, we know that the Leafs are talking about signing him to a 4-year contract. I believe March 1st is the date that people are saying you can expect to see a deal done. It is, and this is something I didn't think I would necessarily be saying, it's hard to imagine the Leafs without Jake Muzzin next year, which is a sign of just how important he has become to this team. If you can put yourself in a position where people go from thinking, yeah, if he's back, that's okay. I mean, I think at the start of the year, people thought, okay, if they get Jake Muzzin back at a good price, that's fine. But I don't think anybody's really going to, you know, go to war over whether or not you get Jake Muzzin back.
Right.
That opinion has changed.
I agree.
That opinion has changed now. He's as close, I wouldn't say he's irreplaceable because there's probably only 3 or 4 players in this team who are really irreplaceable, but you'd feel better having him around.
Yeah, and I understand where your point's coming from. Like, if this was a different group with better defensemen, my thought on him would probably be different.
Yeah.
But for this group and what he provides, you know, it's... I think you have to bring. I mean, he's in a great leverage position. I feel like you have to bring him back. I mean, can you imagine this team without Jake?
Well, you're
Muzzin
not going to have Barrie, so yeah. I think I'm beginning to think that you move Tyson Barrie at the deadline, and you get something that helps you now and something that helps you next year.
I just wonder what you can. I mean, I don't even know what you can get from it.
I mean, there are teams out there who are. There are teams out there who are in a better position than the Leafs right now who have realistic expectations of going on a long playoff run. I'm sure they would have use for Tyson Barrie. Whether or not you're going to get, you know, first round pick or whatever for him, I doubt that. The Raptors get back on the court tonight. They will host the Phoenix Suns at Scotiabank Arena. We will have the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 7 o'clock is our pregame, 7:30 tip-off. We'll be joined by Matt Devlin later on in the show. The Hurricanes are in town. They'll play the Leafs tomorrow night. That will be part of our Hockey Night in Canada presentation. And the Toronto Blue Jays will start their Grapefruit League campaign this weekend with a game in Tampa on Saturday against the Yankees, and in Fort Myers on Sunday against the Minnesota Twins. Shai Davidi will be along later on in the show, and we'll talk to Shai. We'll get a sense of what's going on at Blue Jays camp. He had a rather extensive sit-down with Mark Shapiro, president and CEO of the Blue Jays, yesterday, or a couple of days ago at least. It was on the website yesterday. And some interesting comments from Mark about where this team is and sort of where they envision things going. And again, I don't have it right in front of me right now, but I know that Charlie Montoyo has sort of set his rotation for spring training. I can find it here. They've already given us an indication of who is going to start these two games this weekend. But let me see if I can pull this up. I know our friend Mike Wilner tweeted it out.
I know Ryu is making his spring training start on February 27th against the Twins.
Right.
So that's when he goes first.
Okay, where are we? Here we go. So Charlie Montoya, this is a spring rotation through the first six games. Trent Thornton starts against the Yankees. Anthony Kay gets a start against the Twins. Shun Yamaguchi, Chase Anderson, Trent Thornton again, Hyunjin Ryu, and as Mike points out, Matt Shoemaker and Tanner Roark have been dealing with the flu. There is, I believe there's a split squad game in there.
With Nate Pearson or someplace. We'll get the start against the Yankees.
So there you go. That is the Blue Jays spring training rotation. Interesting that they are going to put Trent Thornton right away into a regular turn in the rotation. I think they'll try to get a read. The way these things work, if you're looking at candidates for that fifth starter spot, you kind of go with the person who's closest to being an incumbent. You try to get them in a regular routine. In this case, Trent Thornton, try to get them in a regular routine and go from there. So that, at least if you're Trent Thornton, is a reasonably good news, because it would essentially indicate you've got a leg up in that roster, on that roster spot. Luke Fox is Sportsnet's NHL writer. He was all over the Leafs' big win over the Penguins last night. Luke Fox will join us. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Friday, we'll be joined by Ren LeVar, NHL insider with TVS Sports at 4 o'clock. Pete Walker, Blue Jays pitching coach, will be along at 4:25 from Dunedin. Shai Davidi from Dunedin as well. Matt Devlin, Raptors and Suns, get back at it tonight. And as we mentioned, the Leafs will take on the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow night at Scotiabank Arena. Leafs Nation pregame with Alberga and Stelic will be at 6:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hockey Night in Canada's pregame at 6:30 with McLean Friedman, Rudy Burke, and Johnson. Puck drop will be just after 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. CBC Sportsnet Ontario. Leafs Nation postgame with Alberga and Stelic will be right after the final horn on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. If you're jonesing for some pucks tonight, the Boston Bruins will take on the Calgary Flames at 9 o'clock on Sportsnet. The Bruins making an acquisition just before we came on the air. They made a deal with the Anaheim Ducks, and in that deal, they sent Axel Anderson, a 2020 first-round pick, and forward David Backes to Anaheim for Andre Case, and a winger with the Anaheim Ducks. So the Bruins, a team expected to be active at the deadline. Some people have linked them with Chris Kreider making their move here, and we'll see if they have another move to make. I would suggest that Axel Anderson and a 2020 first-round pick, having already moved those, I would think the Bruins would be very careful making their next move. Luke Fox is Sportsnet's NHL writer, senior NHL writer. He joins us on Writer's Block. Hello, Luke. Luke.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How you doing? Thought we lost you for a minute. Was that their most complete game of the year last night? I mean, I look back, I thought they were pretty good in Nashville, that 5-2 win, and then they had that 3-0 win over the Islanders, which I thought were pretty complete games. But would you classify last night's game from start to finish as the least most complete this year?
Absolutely. I think given the opponent, given that they shut down Sidney Crosby, given the circumstances and the pressure on them coming off those two horrible losses, I think it was absolutely their most complete game. And if they can bottle that, then like Freddie Anderson said, they could take on any team. Now the challenge is not let it be a one-off.
Right.
Keep doing it.
Luke, why do you think that happened? Why do you think that last night they were able to put it together?
I think they started feeling it. I think the internal leadership called each other out. I think like a little bit like Keith said, you know, they got embarrassed to the point where they had to show up. And they knew they had that in them. That's the frustrating part. That's why I get my fans so frustrated, because they can't have that.
Hey, Luke, we've got some issues with the phone here. We're gonna have to call you back. I don't know if it like sounded like the wind tunnel thing was happening.
Luke, if you're a Star Wars fan, Luke was like in Hoth there. It was very hard to hear him. Hoth is the ultimate winter planet, so you're basically hearing the wind whipping behind him.
Never heard of Hoth.
You got to check out the Star Wars.
So. Not a chance in hell.
Shows.
No.
Movies.
59. If I haven't watched it by now, I don't need
you're
to
done?
Watch it.
No chance?
I don't know. Need to watch.
I mean, you're familiar with that it exists, at least, right? You know, you've heard of it.
I've heard of it. I've never seen a second of any Star Wars. So
really? Not even one? Not even the original?
No. I'm a serious guy. I don't have time for science fiction.
And what are you watching, like Fellini movies or something?
I have watched more Fellini movies, as a matter of fact. I like subtitles on my movies. I like subtitles.
Unlike the President of the United States.
Yeah, Travis has got that look in his game face? No, he's got the two fingers over the right eye. It's like the start of a migraine look that he sometimes gets.
Maybe the urgency will motivate him to get Luke Fox back.
I thought you, as a man of letters, would be able to do better than a sense of urgency.
I didn't say it was the only. I mean,
a reset.
By the way, I think Luke Fox actually.
Would you say that they gave 110% last night?
I'll give you the idea. I'll give you the reset is a terrible cliche. I'm with you on that.
Sense of urgency.
But urgency is not. We're all motivated by urgency.
I'm not.
In our life. Trust me, you are.
No, I'm not.
In times in your life, you have been.
No. Dinner time, maybe. Travis, speaking of urgency, are we going to have Luke or not?
We'll have him in a minute. He's just finding indoors.
Where the hell was he?
I'm assuming outdoors.
Well.
It's a comedy team of Blair and McKenzie.
Seriously.
Playing in Kenosha tomorrow.
What?
Kenosha or Peoria is always like your standard line of where.
Luke, where the hell were you? Were you like at the Arctic Circle or something? Or?
Pretty close. I am out snowboarding, so I needed to find a place that was a little bit more out of the wind.
You're out snowboarding?
Yeah. The Leafs have a day off, so I tried to take advantage of strike day here, so I'm out with my son.
You know what I would do the next time? I would just tell Travis I'm busy and just not come on. I appreciate you doing this.
It is, yeah. It's very nice of you, Luke, but take the vacation.
It is deadline time, right? Like,
that's
try
true.
To pitch in.
Well, right. I'll make sure there's an extra couple hundred bucks in your pay stub nice. Because of this.
So, Luke, we were talking about the notion of it's one thing to obviously want to play well. It's one thing to need to play well. But why do you think it happened last night? What was the reason that we saw what I think I agree with you? Essentially the best effort of the year.
Please don't say urgency.
Well, I think they kind of got embarrassed into it. I mean, the coach peeled the paint off the walls. Jake Muzzin spoke out. And I think they respect him. And I think it got to the point where reality sunk in that if they don't start showing up and giving a better effort, they could end up on the outside of the playoffs. And, you know, it's a shame. And Kasperi Kapanen used the word shameful about their previous two games in Buffalo and Pittsburgh. But it is kind of shame that it gets to that point where it's kind of like the season starts to be in question or fans start getting really enraged that it has to get that bad to summon that type of performance. The flip side is we know what they are capable of, and they showed it. Yeah, but you're right. Like it is too bad that it gets to that point. They have to almost hit rock bottom before they give their head a shake and deliver that. What I will say is that room after that win was something I haven't seen before. You know, usually they trot one guy out at a time. He answers questions. He's very calm. But there was a lot of emotion. Like, that was kind of one of those wins that I think can gel a team. And we'll see if it's a turning point of the year, because it feels like it has that potential. Of course, they have to keep it rolling. And when you look at their upcoming opponents, Carolina, Tampa, Vancouver, like, these are all playoff teams or teams with playoff aspirations. So the tests aren't going to get any easier.
No, and, you know, and Richard made a good point in the previous segment about Jake Muzzin as well, because I think there's a tendency when we look at this Leafs leadership group, I think we automatically assume it's John Tavares. We automatically assume it's Morgan Rielly, you know, maybe Austin Matthews. But I'm really getting the sense that Jake Muzzin is a guy who has kind of, it's almost as if he's stepped into maybe a bit of a vacuum that has been created by Morgan Rielly's absence.
By Morgan Rielly's absence and the removal of Patrick Marleau and Ron Hainsey.
Great point.
In that room.
Great point.
You know, he's the only, well, until Kyle Clifford arrived, he was the only guy with a ring.
Right.
And I mean, for us as fans, you know, that means a lot, but for fellow hockey players, you know, looking at a guy and realizing he's won a Stanley Cup, it means the world. Like the day before, the day before that game where they won, Mitch Marner was asked about, you know, did what Sheldon Keefe say, you know, have a big impact on you guys? Are you finally going to listen? Are you going to respond? And he went in a total different direction. He said, he kind of was like, it didn't matter what Keefe said. He said, I watched what Jake Muzzin said. And he wasn't there in the room to hear Jake Muzzin's comments to the media. So he must have made a point of watching that on a screen somewhere. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that resonated with me. And I think it takes one of your peers. Like, Mike Babcock actually talked a lot about this. Like, the coach can only do so much. It gets to the point where the players have to take ownership of the room themselves. And, yes, I think maybe part of it's with Morgan not being there. And part of it's just, you know, Muzzin being a guy that plays that nasty way. I mean, the guy played two-thirds of a game with a broken foot already this season.
Right.
Like, he carries a lot of respect in that room. And even when they named John Tavares captain, they said there's another part of the leadership group that doesn't wear letters, and that's Muzzin, that's Hyman, and that's Freddie Anderson. And all three of those guys had excellent games.
This will be our last chance to talk to you before the trade deadline on Monday. As we sit here on Friday, what, 72 hours, maybe a little more than 72 hours before the deadline, what are you expecting from Kyle Dubas? And let me ask you this. Can the Leafs, after given the way they won last night, if they follow that win up with another impressive win against the Carolina Hurricanes, does that change at all, do you think, what Kyle Dubas will do on Monday? Or do you think he's going to do what he's going to do and that, you know, his strategy's been in place for a couple of weeks?
The latter. I think he has his strategy. He's definitely loath to dip into the rental market, and I think we saw that with that kind of rush of rental defensemen, guys like Dylan DeMello and Brendan Dillon. Those are a couple of names that I think would have actually helped this team. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs weren't even in the bidding for those. So he's kind of stuck to his guns in kind of avoiding the rental market. The secondary rental market in terms of defensemen is quite thin. You know, you got Sammy Vatanen, who's actually injured right now. Maybe try and bring Ron Hainsey back. Like, these are cheap options, but they're hardly impact players. What Dubas has always maintained is that he wants a right shot that can hopefully help out for this playoff run, but more importantly, help out with the team moving forward. Someone with term. That's why we've heard, you know, names like Matt Dumba and Josh Manson. I think Rasmus Ristolainen is kind of a nasty guy in Buffalo. Trading within the division is always difficult, but he would be an interesting add to this team. But those deals are harder to pull off. So I think he's going to try and make one of those deals. But if it doesn't happen, he can always circle back and go after it at the draft, because there's no way they're bringing back Tyson Barrie. And this team has a long-term hole to fill on that right side. Timothy Liljegren, you know, he's had a nice little look here, but he's not ready.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, what was your initial sort of initial reaction analysis to Dennis Malgin and particularly playing with John Tavares and William Nylander?
I was a little surprised. I thought maybe he'd get as high as the third line, but to see him in the top six was really interesting. I thought he had a great game, considering he didn't even get a practice. Like, he didn't even have like a one practice shift with that line. He flew three time zones away. The Panthers were over in California on a trip. Comes in, quick morning skate, and then right alongside John Tavares and Willie Nylander. And he had a blast. I think he had a good game, a good first impression. More importantly, what it's done, what it did, was it allowed the third line to improve.
Right.
I think sliding back Kerfoot into center with Kapanen and Engvall, that line controlled over 70% of the shot attempts. Of course, Kerfoot and Kapanen linked for that really beautiful goal. And this has been a sore point for Keith for about a month and a half, is depth scoring in the bottom six. You know, we've always talked about the least forward depth, but it's actually been kind of dry for a month and a half or so, ever since Ilya Mikheyev went down. So the Malgin addition has actually helped the third line, giving it quite a boost. So I would imagine he sticks with it Saturday.
Luke, I mean, it's really too early to make any kind of sort of judgments or pronouncements on this, but, you know, one of the interesting things for me is, Kyle has now brought in three guys, at least, you know, Clifford, Campbell, and Malgin, into the sort of the chemistry of the room. And I realize they're not going to be part of the leadership group, but that does have an impact, right? Like that, like bring three new people into the room, particularly one guy who's got at least, you know, it's got a Stanley Cup experience. It could mean something. And it's just interesting to me that at this point of the season, it's a little bit of a different room with these additions.
Yeah, I think Malgin's kind of a neutral addition. He's a really quiet guy. I think he's just going to kind of go about his business. But Clifford and Campbell, those are two personalities, two guys the GM was very familiar with. He had a relationship with both of them that predates him even joining the Leafs. And Jack Campbell, my goodness, like, he's quickly become a favorite within that room. Austin Matthews and him have already carpooled to practice. The guy is just all smiles. He was one of the happiest guys in that dressing room last night, and he didn't even step on the ice. Like, he is just one of the boys. And it's kind of blown my mind, actually, how quickly he's gelled with that group. And Kyle Clifford, you know, he had he's neighbors with Jake Muzzin in the offseason in L.A. He knows some of the guys as well. He was a Leaf fan growing up. He had his three kids out on the ice and practice the other day, and they were playing around with Mitch Marner and Travis Dermott. Like, it's been kind of seamless for those two guys in terms of bringing new personalities. I think they fit very well.
Luke, it was really good of you to join us from the ski hill. Thanks so much.
Apologies for the wind.
No problem. Now that we know where you are and why you were there, I'm completely fine with it. Thanks, man.
Well, it's strike day. All right. Have a good weekend, guys.
Take care. It's Luke Fox being a good father. He is taking his kid out in the ski hill. Love it.
He is right. It's strike day.
He's snowboarding, too. Even better. Luke joining us.
Yeah, you gotta respect Luke. He goes from one rink to another snow arena. But
what?
Well, he goes from the ice rink to another snow arena to the snowboard facility. I mean, what?
I don't get it.
I'm with
arena.
Richard. It makes sense.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Travis. All right. Jeez, Blair.
Why not a snow arena? Got a scoreboard over the snow.
Do it at the Olympics. Anyway, pretty interesting, though, what Luke had to say about those new guys. Two guys, at least, if nothing else, seem to be adding to the good vibes in the room.
So they helped create a sense of urgency, did they?
They did last night.
God.
Blair, you're so lucky after your absurd Frederik Andersen takes yesterday. You're just lucky that you did call. You almost nailed. I actually was honestly, I know you don't think this is true. I was rooting for the fifth goal. Because I think I was, because I was thinking of you watching and probably hoping that the, Penguins scored a last second one, so you could walk in here 5-1.
I was at the restaurant last night.
What is the restaurant?
At a restaurant.
Oh, a restaurant.
I was not occupied watching.
Boy, was that
watching the Loafs play?
Really?
And again, all I said, all I said is that Freddie Anderson will be traded in the offseason. That's not going to change. I just said I didn't say he was going to be traded at the deadline. I said he was going to be traded in the offseason.
But you'd deal him right now for the right deal.
No, I'd trade him in the offseason. I wouldn't deal him right now.
We have to get Travis back on the air here.
Deal him right now.
I feel like you're pulling back a little bit.
Anyhow. I'll tell you, though, I have identified the biggest point of the Leafs season. And with all due respect to Luke, it was not last night.
When was it?
Nor will it be Saturday. Nor will it be Monday. I'll tell you when it is.
Looking forward to it.
The most important part of the Leafs season, the part of the season that will tell you whether or not this team is going to go to the playoffs and has a chance of advancing. I'll enlighten you, much as I did with my bold prediction, the Penguins. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Watch me! Watch me! I got it! Watch me!
God, you and Travis spoke for like 20 minutes. Hey! I had no idea what the hell you were talking about. It was like noise. Noise, noise, noise.
We were talking about Ken Dryden, actually, interestingly enough. Sports conversation.
The, What was I gonna say? Yes. Oh, we've been debating whether or not the Toronto Maple Leafs schedule will be like. I have identified for Leafs fans the most important part of the Maple Leafs schedule.
I'm waiting.
They'll tell us everything we need to know. The day after the trade deadline,
okay,
they are in Tampa to play the Lightning.
Oof,
off day, then they're in Florida to play the Panthers. Then they're home to play the Knuckleheads. Then they go on the road. We will be able, I'm going to forecast this.
Okay.
We will be able to make a prediction as to whether or not this team is going to go to the playoffs a week from today, Thursday the 28th, when they will have finished playing the Panthers.
How many games would be left in that scenario?
Doesn't matter.
Ooh, that's still early.
Doesn't matter.
But it's an interesting observation by you.
They have, I will say this for the Leafs. They have at least three games left against the Lightning. I believe they have two against the Panthers. They have their...
That's not an easy schedule.
They have their destiny in their hands.
How many of those games are the Panthers?
Don't know. Don't ask.
I was just going to ask
how many are home and away?
Home and away. You don't know?
No, because my computer screen just froze.
Oh, okay. I mean, like, you figured that wouldn't be a tough question for you if you had it
no,
up.
No, but it did. It just did.
Okay. I think that'll be,
and you know, and Florida has not been kind to the Leafs. You know, the trips to Florida last year, it was the scandal of the boys going out in the boat and actually having a beer and while they were fishing, and then they pooped the bed after that. And then, of course, this year, when Sheldon Keefe was being nice and kind to them, they absolutely crapped the bed in Florida after a lovely day in the sun. Florida has been the undoing for this particular group of Leafs.
Well, will
be testing.
I think it was Elliot who said this, or was it CJ? Said, like, the good news for the Maple Leafs is they essentially, or it was Greg Wyshynski. I take that back. It was actually Greg Wyshynski.
I could see how you get Wyshynski and Elliot.
They only have to stay ahead of the Panthers to make the playoffs. That they are in an incredible fortunate situation compared to some other teams. They don't at the moment have to sort of play the wild card. The wild card game.
So here's let me just give you this.
So those Florida games are massive.
25th, they're in Tampa. 27th, they're in Florida. Let's go to March. I want to make sure I get this right.
They still should have about 16 games left.
The 10th of March, they're home to Tampa. The 23rd of March, they're home to Florida. The 25th of March, they're in Tampa. And I do believe that's, so that's it. So they've got... You've got your destiny in your hands there.
Florida determines their destiny.
The road to the playoffs.
Much like most American presidents.
I was about to say, hanging chads, the road to the playoffs goes through Florida.
Bad things usually happen to good people.
It usually does.
Bad things usually happen to good people in Florida.
It usually does. Florida is the place where dreams have gone to die in the past.
Where democracy dies.
Democracy and the Leafs have died in the past.
I will say, I mean, that's the Lightning can be tough, though. That's not an easy... That's not an easy ask.
So tell us about, I didn't want to cut you off. You started, because I know you and Travis were having a really in-depth discussion.
You weren't even listening.
I was listening. I had to do with your article in The Athletic on Ken Dryden. Give us a little bit of, give us a little bit of sense of that.
This is going to look like
Ken Dryden's one of our favorites.
Yeah. I don't want to look like I'm flogging my article.
No,
here,
here's
Jeff,
the thing. I'm taking,
because I didn't ask to do it.
You know what? Normally the cup that I have here, where you put a quarter in every time you mention The Athletic,
right,
I'm taking
which
it
I
off.
I have not done
I'm
it taking almost it off. At all. All right, thank you. All right, so, you know, the February 22nd, 1980.
And I'd forgotten about this.
Yeah, February 22nd, 1980 marks the date of what is considered, and I think correctly so, the greatest sports moment in United States history. And that's the United States Olympic hockey team beating the Russians 4-3 in Lake Placid. It's basically a whole other time. College kids basically beating pros. Greatest upset ever, at least according to, I think, most people in the United States who were alive at the time. And everybody remembers, if you've probably seen the highlights, Al Michaels with probably the most famous sports broadcasting call in American history. Do you believe in miracles? Pause. Yes. What most people do not know or do not remember is the analyst for that game was Ken Dryden.
That's right.
Hockey Hall of Famer, Canadian royalty. He happened to have a very high-profile American agent who landed him that job. And he was an analyst for the entire Olympic hockey tournament for ABC while, and this was Travis and I were talking about this, which is amazing, traveling to Ottawa during the games to take bar classes or legal torts and all this other stuff to sort of continue his legal education. And so if you're interested in this, I mean, so my piece basically is just Dryden's reflections, and Dryden's a brilliant guy, and he sort of explained how this kind of upset could be. But the one thing I just point out, Jeff, if you Google this, and you can basically Google the last minute of this game, it's everywhere on YouTube. Al Michaels' call is always remembered, right? Do you believe in miracles?
Right.
What gets lost to time is right before Al Michaels says that, Ken Dryden says it's over as one of the American defensemen flips the puck beyond the blue line, which is kind of a good. And then this is what really gets lost to time, but it's sort of the right word as well. So Al Michaels says, do you believe in miracles? Yes. The crowd like roars and all you hear is crowd noise. But in the background, you hear Ken Dryden say, unbelievable. But the unbelievable part, obviously, of course, gets lost to time because of Al Michaels. So go, if you happen to just have a couple minutes, watch the last minute of that game, and you will hear Ken Dryden flank Al Michaels in sort of what is considered the greatest game-closing call of all time. But Dryden, he's been on this show before. He is just you almost can't believe just how brilliant the guy is, that the guy was like one of the great athletes of his day. It's crazy.
And there are a couple of amazing things about that game. I mean, first of all, it was not the final game the Americans
played.
Correct.
They still had to play Finland.
Right. So it wasn't the final. It wasn't like the golden goal. It wasn't like Sydney's golden goal. It was not the last act of the Olympics. The other thing is, it took place in Lake Placid. And if you watch clips of it, trust me, that arena is still basically that. It's tiny. And the great story about it is there was the traffic jams on the road. And if you've ever been to Lake Placid, I mean, a traffic jam in Lake Placid
is like one light town, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
The traffic jams were so bad that the writers and a lot of the broadcasters covering the event actually walked a couple of miles to get to the arena.
Wow.
So you had all these people, and eventually at some point, people started leaving their cars, just kind of abandoning their cars on the side and walking to, because you were not going to get anywhere. It is the Lake Placid Olympic Village. You know, I've gone down there to see bobsled and luge a couple of times. They still have the original speed skating oval, which is outdoors and goes around.
Eric Hyde?
Yeah, they still got the original speed skating oval. It's a remarkable
trip. And one last thing, this is a Canadian thing. So Dryden and I quickly talked about the Canada team this year, because I was just fascinated by it. Two biggest stars of that team, Glenn Anderson, Randy Gregg.
That's right, Dr. Randy Gregg. There you go.
And they finished sixth, I think.
Great stuff. Yeah, they were not. Well, that was when NHL players weren't.
Correct.
Weren't in the
game has changed.
Very quickly before we run, Calgary Olympics, best article I wrote, the Calgary Olympics, and I was at the Calgary Herald. I got a hold of everybody on that U.S. men's team and asked them where their gold medals were.
Oh, physically. I love that. That's awesome.
People like Phil Vercote and that. A couple of guys had buried it with their parents. I
like that.
That's a great anniversary to remember.
Yeah.
Matt Devlin's next. The Raptors are back on the court tonight. It's Writer's Block on 590 and 360.
Now, Now we introduce you to the hosts of Writer's Block.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Hope you guess my name.
Here are Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Finally, the interminable NBA All-Star break is over for the Toronto Raptors. I don't like All-Star breaks. I don't like going like that long without meaningful basketball.
Players got to rest, Jeff.
Oh, I know, I know. I'm just saying from a fan's point of view, I don't like.
No, I get it.
Spending
it's
a week without. Although, meaningful
did
basketball.
You? I don't know. You know, I know you were at your fancy dinner last night, but there was NBA basketball.
There was NBA basketball.
Yeah. Actually, some. I'm sure you didn't watch it, but, you know, because after having little kids, you have no life. I did watch the Hawks and Heat. It was a pretty good game. Why are you looking at me like that, Blair? I'm telling you I watched the Hawks and Heat. I'm telling you I'm invested in the NBA. I hate the silence, as you know, because it doesn't lead me to a place where I can go. Because if I start going off, then I throw off the show. We have a guest.
What is it? Silence.
But if I don't say anything, then no one is talking.
No, that's okay. Yeah. No, I just
Travis, get your guy in place.
No, we've got Matt Devlin here. We've got Matt Devlin who's going to join us. The Raptors.
He was probably watching like me, the Hawks and Heat, because he's a basketball head like I am.
No answer from Matt. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. I just caught the tail end of that discussion. All I heard was, Travis, get your guy. And the tail end of the Hawks, maybe.
Well, you didn't miss much, Matt.
Deitch is upset because I wasn't watching the Hawks and Heat last night. Because I was out for dinner.
Well, guess what? I didn't either.
Oh, Matt.
There you go.
You broke my heart, Matt.
There you go.
It's the All-Star break, and it was an opportunity to go out to dinner with some friends.
There you go. See?
And so, and the place that the establishment that I went to only had the Leaf game on. So, good to see that they won 4-0, and all is good.
Blair went to some place with subtitles in the background, so you might have them.
There were no subtitles in the back. There were no TVs.
Although I did see... You know, Trey Young, and I mean, it was
fun.
I mean, some of those, it'd be great if they could take that next step and for that organization to start winning, right? And I think, from by all accounts of the people in the NBA that I've spoken to, you know, that's really what their focus now is, deciding who are the players that they want to move forward with, and then, you know, what players in the off season, you know, are they willing to move, you know, to bring in not a veteran, but a veteran, not in the sense of a 28 to 32 year old, but somebody that has 4 or 5 years under their belt that has won and is now ready to kind of take on that next role.
Yeah, there were a couple of years ago, the Hawks were a team that was just on the cusp, and you kind of like to see them take a step forward, because I didn't see that game, but I'll tell you what, I could watch a lot of Trae Young very easily.
Yeah. He's extremely exciting to watch. He's somebody that they're invested in. The ownership group was really the ones behind taking him over Luka Doncic, because they knew, you know, that having a player like Trae Young, that, you know, their ratings are up. The team's won less this year, but ratings are up because, you know, they're in a situation where people want to turn the TV on and see Trae Young.
Right. How concerned are you that Marc Gasol is not going to be able to play tonight, and that I think Nick Nurse's line was they're going to, quote, wait a little bit before putting him back in the lineup? Does it concern you at all, or at this point, you know, given where the Raptors are and given where we are in the schedule, you know, why not give him a little extra time if he needs it?
Yeah, I'm not concerned. I think there's a couple of things at play. One, you have 27 games left, 14 of which are on the road. You know the difficult task that you face in front of you with respect to Indiana, Milwaukee coming to town. The beginning of March, you head out on a lengthy road trip. You know, that's all certainly understood. The most important thing, as all three of us know, is that having Mark back right now isn't as important as having Mark back come the middle of April and ready to go. He played a ton of basketball last year. And the fact that this is the second time with the same hamstring, to me, it just signals, let's be patient. Let's not rush it. Let's make sure the next time he's back for a lengthy period of time because, you know, obviously they're hoping to make another championship run.
You know, Matt, one of the interesting things that I've read over the last 48 hours or so was how forthright Nick is about putting Pascal in very, very high leverage situations over these next 27 games. So what I think that means very, very clearly is, Matt, end of game situations, including against good teams, which they'll be playing, the ball is probably going into Pascal, and then he's going to have to decide ultimately what happens on that play.
We saw that even in the All-Star game, didn't we, down the stretch? Couple of different things, one of which, if you go back to last year with Pascal, we saw him early in the season. I know it was something that got talked about later in the season and then at the beginning of this season, that initiating the offense through Pascal, which meant, you know, rebounding, he's getting up, he's distributing, he's handling the basketball. And what we've seen now over the course of the last couple of months, and I've talked to Nick about it, I've mentioned it a couple of times on the broadcast, that you are seeing situations out there on the floor where Pascal is taking some shots that you may say, well, geez, are they in the framework of the offense? Some ISO mid-range jumpers, getting to a spot, trying to make a shot. All that, once again, in the brilliance of Nick Nurse and the organization, all that is for not today, but all of that is for the postseason when we understand that things can slow down to a crawl. You need to get your best player the basketball. He needs to have a reference point of having success in those situations. And so that's why you're seeing at times, you know, Pascal, okay, hey, I'm going to go one-on-one. Double's not coming. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to fade away. I'm going to try to knock down this shot. Or, hey, I'm running to this spot right here. It's a 17-foot jumper, and I'm going to make that shot. So all that is in the attempt to get him comfortable to what you said, Richard, was, hey, ball in his hands, late-game situation, ball in his hands even earlier in the game, and let's see what he can do with it, because hopefully what he does today is going to help him later on.
And that, you know, that, and that's something that's going to be important as well, because, you know, one of the real reasons I thought this team would miss Kawhi Leonard this year, several reasons, but one of them is, you know, Kawhi and Kyle together, you had two guys who were capable of closing out games. Yep. Kyle can still close out a game, but I think we need to see Pascal, frankly, we need to see him be able to do that. We need him to emerge as that second option late in the game.
Well, for sure. And, you know, he was last year, and I remember Nick Nurse saying in the postseason when asked about Pascal, you know, growing into, you know, that second option. And he goes, why? He wasn't the second option before. It was along those lines, right?
Right.
You know, he was that player. He did finish the game against Phoenix with a game winner. As we've seen earlier this year, he's put the ball in Norm's hand, late game situation, right? All those are examples of, hey, we're trying to give our players, you know, these opportunities because they may be in those situations later. And a couple of other pieces to what, you know, you were speaking to, Jeff, about, you know, you have Kyle. Yes, you have Kyle. His usage rate is up in comparison to last year. Let's not forget that when you have Kawhi, a lot of other players' usage rate is going to be down in comparison to Kawhi. Now you have players that their ratio and their usage is up. And within that, you don't have Norman Powell back as of yet. And he was playing at a high level. And let's not forget about the year that Serge Ibaka has had. And he was integral during the course of the postseason last year, whether it be when they went big against Philadelphia. He had 17 points in the game 7 against Philly, as well as, you know, against Milwaukee and then into Golden State. And he's really been tremendous this year.
Matt, I want to ask you, you know, so much of the next 27 games are going to be about seeding. and where one the Raptors finish, and then two, obviously, and you know, equally as important, ultimately, what happens between 2 and 6? You know, assuming that nobody can catch Milwaukee, and assuming that nobody falls to 7. When you look at that, at the non-Raptors teams, the Celtics, the Pacers, the Sixers, the Heat, I'm interested in your sort of top line thoughts as to who you think will ultimately present the biggest challenge come April, May.
Well, it's a good conversation because we could, and I think all the teams could have this conversation. You could make a case for each one of those teams posing the problem.
Yeah.
And the Raptors are a game and a half in front of Boston. Boston is a team that feels as though this is their time. Then, you know, you get into Miami. We know what they've added. You know you have Jimmy Butler. You know that they are, you know, the way they play defensively and what they stand for and who they are, they're going to be a tough out. And then you get into Philadelphia, who is probably one of the most underachieving teams in the NBA based upon the talent that they have. I mean, they were in a game last night, a game that I did, you know, watch quite a bit of late. And that was, you know, the Brooklyn-Philly game. And, you know, they eventually end up winning it in overtime. And then you get to Indiana, who's now trying to bring back Victor Oladipo. So I think all of them can pose a problem. We could get into specific reasons as to why. But ultimately, from a time perspective, when you look at those teams, everyone from 1 to 6, I believe, really feels comfortable about making sure that, okay, as long as we're healthy, ready to go, we can beat any one of those teams. I really believe that Philly believes it. I think Indiana believes it. I know Miami believes it. You know Boston believes it. And you know Toronto believes it. And certainly all the pressure of this postseason is going to be squarely on the Mike Budenholzer in Milwaukee and how do they handle that pressure. 2 through 6 does not have that pressure. Maybe a little bit of Boston, but certainly Milwaukee does.
You know, one of the players that
Philly
I'm gonna,
does too.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. One of the players that I'm really going to be paying attention to down the stretch, because I don't know if you know what to make of him yet, is OG Anunoby. You know, he's doubled the steals, doubled the blocks from a year ago. Now he was hurt. He's made more corner threes than anyone in the team. I don't know defensive win shares. You know, he leads the team in defensive win shares. Do you think that Nick will want to see him down the stretch develop into even more of that sort of that 3-and-D guy that a lot of people want him to be?
Oh, no question. I think one of just the basic numbers that stands out to me is when he scores 10 or more points, they're 21-4.
Yeah.
And so having a couple of made corner threes, getting a defensive stop, getting out in transition a couple of times, all of a sudden that's your 10 points, right? Mm-hmm. And they're 21-4 in those games. Consistency has been elusive. When he does show it, Raptors are a much better team because we know how important that position is on the court. He is somebody that defensively can guard multiple positions. And when he does find that offensive rhythm, wow, does it really help out? We've also seen as of late him not being on the floor in late game situations,
right,
as they've gone to different lineups. And so to your point, Jeff, I do think that this is going to be 27 games of trying to see if OG now, second, you know, half of the season, obviously we're beyond that, but when you look at this final stretch, can he start getting some of these games where the productivity at both ends is there on a night-in and night-out basis? And I would think, and I don't know if you guys would agree with this, that if his defensive posture and his defensive focus is there, that things will happen at the other end. It always seems that seems to be the case with Norman Powell too, right?
Yep.
Where when he had that sort of disposition, things really helped out on the, and I found that to be also the case with OG Anunoby.
Matt, any update on Norm Powell? Even a tentative one?
And yeah, you know what? I have not received anything as of late. You know, I think that for Norm, very much like Marc Gasol, and who knows, while we're talking here, there could be the latest report being out there. But I think you want to put him in a situation, because this is the second time for him this season. I know, obviously, a hand before it was a shoulder, same shoulder as last year, where you just want to make sure that over the course of the final 27, that he's in position to be successful as they get into the postseason. But I don't have anything concrete as of right now.
Matt, good stuff as always, my friend. I look forward to chatting you regularly as we wind down the season and get ready for the playoffs. Thanks, man.
Well, look forward to it as well. And should be a lot of fun, 27 to go, and a couple of big ones over the course of, which is hard to believe. This is the longest homestand of the year, a four-game homestand.
Wow.
It just, you know, and then you begin March and you're out there for a while. So yep. A couple of key weeks here for the Raptors.
Absolutely. Take care, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
All the best. Yeah, we'll see you down at the arena.
Absolutely. The Pacers and Raptors, by the way, will be Sunday on Sportsnet 1, 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock tip-off. And that will be an intriguing. Sure.
The Raptors have won their games against the Pacers, but they also both those games, remember, could have flipped, right? So it's been pretty interesting this
year.
Yeah,
yes. I think they've played them three times. Have they not played the Pacers three times?
Maybe the Pacers won one or something.
They won in overtime.
Right. That was a toss-up.
And the game here, the Pacers just kind of – the Pacers were really upset. They threw it away. And then I think Toronto went into Indiana.
And won.
But they will – again, they will
and then
return
the Bucks,
to the court tonight
Bucks
against the Suns.
Bucks the following week.
Yep.
That's a national televised, I think, U.S. game. That's going to be a big one.
And so, again, we will have the Raptors and Suns tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sunday, 5:30 p.m. pregame tip-off just after 6, Pacers and Raptors on Sportsnet 1. Shai Davides, our MLB insider with Sportsnet. He's in lovely Dunedin, Florida, with the Toronto Blue Jays, who will begin their Grapefruit League schedule tomorrow. Play the Yankees on Saturday, the Twins on Sunday. Talk a little baseball with Shai Davides when Writer's Block continues on the home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
More Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Pete Walker, Toronto Blue Jays pitching coach, joins us at 4:25 ahead of the Jays' first Grapefruit League game of the season, or the Grapefruit League season, whatever, you know what I mean, tomorrow against the New York Yankees in Tampa. We will have the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1. Our radio pregame will be at 12:30 p.m., followed by 1 o'clock first pitch. Sunday, the Jays will be in Fort Myers to take on the Twins. First pitch at 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet Ontario. Radio pregame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Shai Davides is our MLB insider with Sportsnet. Shai is in Dunedin, the Blue Jays, and he joins us in Writer's Block. Hello, Shai.
Good day, gentlemen.
What's the most impressive thing you've seen so far? Early days and everything, I know that, but what's the most impressive pitcher, player, thing you've seen so far in Dunedin?
Nate Pearson is a lot of fun, man. Like that, you know, his stuff is good, and as we all know, and triple-digit velocity and all that stuff. But it was really interesting talking to some people after his live batting practice session today, where, you know, a foul ball was a good showing by the hitters he faced. And it's not just velocity. I mean, he's got the big stuff. He's got the big time arm. But little things like the way his pitching mechanics work, you know, he's got a short pitching motion, which is the way Randall Grichuk described it, with a really long arm extension, which means that the ball gets on you fast. So not only are you facing major velocity, but you also have far less time to track the pitch. Mm-hmm. And you put that together, you know, you can understand why there's so much hype and so much excitement about him.
Shai, so much of the spring training was going to be a referendum on how much you know, how much work Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did regarding his fitness, regarding his strength regimen. In the early days of camp, how would you evaluate where he is in relation to what people hoped he would be when he came into camp?
And that's a great question. I think from a hitting perspective, we're going to find out, right? Like, we haven't seen anything where you can draw and, or extrapolate any sort of meaning just yet. But defensively, when you see him, the way that he's moving around the field, he's charging balls in a little better. He's moving side to side a little bit better. You know, that seems to at least for now look different. Now, you know, is that going to last? Is it going to be different when you get to game speed? I don't know. But just judging from, you know, talking conversations with coaches and people who've been watching him, you know, that they say that they sense a really big difference in his movements. And, you know, I mean, Grapefruit League play starts tomorrow for the Blue Jays, and it can come fast enough because I think you see all these things and, you know, everything looks good right now. But, you know, until you're testing it in actual game action, you don't really know.
Shai, you had a chance to have an extensive sit down with Mark Shapiro. It's been reported in two parts. The second part is up today. The first part was up yesterday. He sounds a little different than he has in the past, doesn't he?
A little bit more at ease, yeah. And well, look, I mean, the team's in a much better place, right? And all things being equal, you would think this team is through the worst of it. You know, they've all the core from the 15-16 team is gone. You know, they've had the 95 loss season. You know, the bulk of the core that's supposed to take this team to back to the postseason is in place and on the upswing, you would think. So all those pieces alone make you think that 2020 is going to be a lot better. And, you know, if you're sitting in his chair, you know, you can look at it and say, not that, you know, the hard work is over, but the hardest part of that work, the dreariest part, the part that's most frustrating for everybody, the part that's toughest to live through, you know, that in theory looks like it's behind the organization. You know, all that can go sideways if, you know, Guerrero and Bichette and Biggio, you know, they all hit these major speed bumps in year two and, you know, don't continue to improve, but instead take steps backwards. You know, that would certainly be a worrying place for this team. But, you know, as we're situated today, you would think there's going to be a lot of progress for this group and, you know, a chance to have a season that's substantially better than the last year.
Shai, what was your evaluation regarding your the part of the Q&A where you and Mark discussed attendance and when and if attendance may ultimately come back for this team?
Well, I thought that was interesting. I was very surprised that there wasn't some sort of spike after the Ryu side. You know, I would have thought that, you know, a move like that would have had a bit more impact in the market. But, you know, to me, what that really says is that for the fan base, there's still a lot of wait and see about this. And that's understandable from their standpoint. And, you know, they're looking at it and say, okay, well, you know, you've got one really good pitcher, and then you got some stabilizing big league arms around it. But let's see what this team is before I'm buying back in. And to me, that was really intriguing. I would have thought there would have been a little bit more of a boost. And again, I mean, who knows? Maybe it would have gone backwards if they hadn't signed Ryu and they needed that just to maintain what they had last year. But, you know, maybe it says that this isn't going to bounce back from an attendance standpoint quite that fast until this team really makes a major turn on the field.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I read those comments too. And look, we all remember the reaction when the R.A. Dickey deal was made and the turnover that winter. But yeah, I mean, I think by and large, I mean, I'm with you in this. The only way fans are going to start coming back is if the team wins. That's what got fans back here originally was, you know, the possibility of postseason baseball. And, you know, I keep thinking, Shai, I mean, look, it's not like this team hasn't had anything good happen since 1993, right? They had Roy Halladay here, didn't sell out to see Roy Halladay pitch. They had Roger Clemens here winning back-to-back Cy Youngs. Attendance was okay, but there wasn't a, you know, there wasn't a huge bump when Roger pitched. Delgado had a couple of great years. It's just, I don't think it matters in this city unless you win. Like, I think you could put Bryce Harper and Manny Machado out there, and I don't think it'd make a difference to attendance unless the team wins. That's just the way this city is.
Well, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but after that offseason ahead of the 2013 year, when they got Dickey and Burley and Reyes from the Marlins and the Mets, I do believe there was some spike that year. But it didn't really jump to the significant levels. They didn't break 3 million until after they had gone to the playoffs.
Right.
And that's where that next jump is. I would have thought there would be a bit more of a recovery just based on this offseason alone, because it'd been, you know, a pretty sharp decline over 3 years. They lost almost 50% of the attendance from 2017 to last year.
Right.
You know, that's a really big fall. And you know, if they didn't do what they did, maybe they're not staying level. I mean, this team lost 95 games and they were at 1.75 million fans last year. I mean, maybe it goes down. You know, at this point, the Blue Jays are level. And if they're a good team, maybe that attendance is going up this year. But, you know, this has been not a finicky fan base. This is a fan base that's been patient and it's got a steady core. But trying to get back that extra, you know, essentially 50% of fans that they lost, you know, that's going to be tricky. That's where you really have to be a good team in order to recover that group.
Shai, we know that first base looks like it's going to be a battle. And that, look, there are a variety of right-handed hitters that are vying for positions and left-handed hitters. But what's the battle that most interests you, understanding that we haven't even started the games yet, but, you know, I don't know, is it the battle for that last roster spot, Joe Panik? I don't know. Where do you see the most interesting battle?
Well, all things being equal, I think Joe Panik's on this team. The bench, the way the bench fits in and around him, that's far less certain. But to me, the area I keep looking at is, I don't know how they're going to get the ball on a consistent basis with protecting a lead from the starter to Ken Giles at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got Rafael Dolis and Anthony Bass, and they're ostensibly the setup men. Shun Yamaguchi could end up in that role if he's not in the starting rotation. But there isn't a lot of studies. I mean, last year, you know, the Jays had Hudson and Phelps, Mesa before he was hurt. There were a lot of guys who were helping to bridge that gap on a consistent basis. Even Derek Law did a nice job doing that. And right now, there's no certainty. I mean, you know, we could theoretically end up seeing Wilmer Font in a bit of a setup role. And, you know, I'm not sure that's something that you feel terribly comfortable with going into the season. But I'm really curious to just see how that ends up shaking out, because it strikes me that of all the areas where the Blue Jays got better, that has the potential to be one area where, you know, at least the way it looks right now, the Blue Jays might have taken a step back.
Sure, I want to get your insight into this and sort of how you think this may play out, if it even plays out at all. But Dave Hudgens is the hitting coach of this team, and I think most fans know.
Bench coach,
I'm sorry. And I think most fans know the role that he played with the Astros when he was there. And it seems that the organization is standing behind him. And again, I'm not placing him in the same place as A.J. Hinch or Jeff Luhnow, but that's an interesting decision by this organization, I would argue, that they seem to be comfortable with what Hudgens said to Major League Baseball and obviously what he said to his bosses, and that he's going to be a coach on this team heading forward.
Yeah, and for me, what was intriguing was at the beginning of camp, Dave Hudgens made the point that he wanted to address it, and, you know, he gathered the group of reporters that were here and you know, just spoke candidly, far more candidly than he had beforehand about, you know, what went on, and, you know, being apologetic for not saying anything. You know, he said when I asked, he said that he was going to make a point of talking to the other coaches and talking to some players who might have some raw feelings. And, you know, certainly there have been no shortage of players who've been outspoken about it. You know, Randall Grichuk and Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. first and foremost on that list. And to me, that's where, you know, he really, some of the toughest work for him, you know, explaining to them, hey, this is where I was. And, you know, we still, as much as we found out, we still don't really know exactly all the ins and outs of this and what different people were feeling. And, you know, even when I talked to Derek Fisher about it, and he was just a kid call-up with the Astros in 2017, you know, he was reluctant to speak about his part in it or his feelings because he didn't want to, you know, separate himself from the group. He said, look, it happened as a whole. We were all part of it. We all had a voice. But, you know, a 23-year-old prospect called up in the middle of the season isn't going to get into Carlos Beltran's face and say, hey, this is wrong. We need to stop, you know. So a lot of people were in tough spots. I think if you're in a coaching, if you're in that coaching staff, you're looking at it, you're saying, you know, If I really go out hard against this, am I going to fracture the clubhouse? You know, that was a talented team with a lot of risks. I just think a lot of people were in very difficult positions. And, you know, I believe that the Blue Jays are convinced that Dave Hudgens wasn't a part of that, wasn't party to it, wasn't supportive of it. And otherwise, you know, they would have had to make a tough decision. So it's if he's made amends with the players, you know, that to me is what's ultimately going to allow him to survive. And that has to be the key. And I think that's where a big part of the Blue Jays calculus is.
Shai, Hyunjin Ryu is going to make his first start, I believe, Thursday, correct? Against the Twins?
Yeah, against the Minnesota Twins. Yeah.
Against the Twins. Tell us a little bit about what life is like in the shadow of Hyunjin Ryu, because every bit of footage I see of him, there's a lot of media following him. You know, I know from talking to the Dodgers guys like Bill Shaken, that they loved him. I mean, they just thought it, you know, he having him around was fun. He seems to be a pretty easygoing guy. Give me your sort of initial reaction to what his impact is going to be in the clubhouse with the fan base and, you know, maybe even on the field.
Well, it's still really new. I mean, it's definitely a scene. There's a big following that documents his every move, and obviously the interest in him is great. He does seem very laid back. He seems fun, but everyone's still trying to get to know each other. And you know, he's doing a lot of work with the catchers, talking about, you know, how he likes to do certain things, and some of that has to be done through a translator. So that presents not necessarily challenges, but extra layers of work. But you know, guys are charged up about it. You know, they're excited to have that caliber of pitcher in the rotation once every 5 days. And, you know, that's to me what's probably been most striking is just the, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, the shot in the arm that's provided. You know, you want to have good players around your team. And, you know, the Blue Jays were barely a starting rotation last year. You know, it was a lot of making it up as you went along. And that can be a pretty terrible way to play if you're a position player. And so, you know, this year they look at an improved rotation with a legitimate ace at the front of it. And I think that's created a lot of excitement all around.
Shia, any further thought or insight into why Lourdes Gurriel will be seeing some time at first base?
Well, I think that if you're looking at, you know, right-handed bats who can give you can slide into first base against the left-hander, a good left-handed pitcher, you know, he's probably the right guy. You know, you can have Teoscar Hernandez out in the outfield at that point. You can do a few other things, but there's just he's versatile and he fits there. So it just and a place for the Blue Jays to have a bit more creativity with their lineup and give them some good looks. You know, my sense is that they still do want to give Travis Shaw an opportunity to face some left-handers. So I'm not sure exactly how much we'll see it, but You know, I think if you're one thing this Blue Jays team really likes is positional flexibility, and they're trying to create it at every turn, just to be covered in a number of different scenarios, whether it's injury or underperformance or whatever it may be. They just want to be able to shift guys around as the situation may demand.
Shai, it was great of you to do this, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Shai.
Shai Davidi, our MLB insider with Sportsnet. Again, the schedule, Blue Jays baseball all weekend on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet 1. The first Grapefruit League game tomorrow in Tampa against the Yankees. Trent Thornton on the mound for the Jays. Jay Happ for the New York Yankees. 12:30 p.m. pregame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 1 o'clock first pitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet 1. Sunday, the Jays are in Fort Myers to take on my Minnesota Twins. Anthony Kay on the mound for the Jays. Jose Berrios for the Minnesota Twins. 12:30 p.m. our radio pregame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 1 o'clock first pitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario. Markieff Morris has agreed to a contract buyout with the Detroit Pistons. There are a couple of teams apparently interested in his services, including one we're a little familiar with. We'll talk about it when we come back. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Apparently, Markieff Morris has agreed to a buyout with the Detroit Pistons. Shams Charania reporting that the Lakers have emerged as a front runner to sign him. Toronto has also expressed interest in him. And that's kind of, you know, the post-NBA trade deadline. We've kind of been keeping an eye, haven't we, Richard, on the buyout market. You could expect that the Raptors would at least have an interest in certainly somebody who profiles like Markieff Morris.
Yeah, just looked up his numbers. Again, keep in mind, this is a guy's playing minutes in Detroit, so they'd project lower for a better team. But 11 points a game, 3.9 rebounds, 1.6 assists, PER of 12.81, shooting 45 from the field and 39%. From three. So, Jeff, like, I mean, if you can get a guy like this for nothing, that's a great pickup. I mean, he totally gives you bench depth. Another guy with length who, you know, can defend a little bit. It'll just sort of be – it'll be interesting. It strikes me – Markieff Morris's brother is – there's another Morris, right?
Yeah.
He went to the Clips.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel like the symmetry this guy's going to go to the Lakers?
That would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, but this again, like, the one thing about a player like this is this would be like found money if you can get him for nothing. And, you know, getting somebody who profiles as a rotation player at this point of the season without giving up a major asset would, to me, be great. And they do seem, you know, the one thing about the Raptors is, like, because they've had injuries all year, like, they're probably even in this next 27 games – This guy probably could come in and play 15, 20 minutes.
What concerns would you have about this team now? Or do you have about this team now as we, you know, begin the post All-Star break portion of the schedule tonight?
My biggest concern is health and usage with this group. One, you have to get Marcus all back healthy. So I totally agree with Nick Nurse and the medical staff. Like, it honestly doesn't matter how much Marcus Gasol plays until like the last five games of the season. I mean, if you really needed to, you agree? Like, if he didn't play, like, yeah, I mean, the second seed would be awesome and he certainly would help. But like, what ultimately matters is the postseason. You need this guy for like 25 games when it matters. And I would rather him rest now than play later. But Kyle, I think we've talked about this before, Kyle and Fred maybe worry me as not a little too strong, but those two guys, the minutes that they play, I have my eye on, because I think ultimately you can't get back to the finals unless those guys play at essentially their best levels that they played in the postseason. I'm still not even sure that'll be enough, but in order for you to go where you hope to go, Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet Fred VanVleet probably are going to have to play high 30-minute games. Would you agree? Mm-hmm. In the second round and third round. I don't know how you beat the Bucks or the Celtics without those guys playing those minutes.
Yeah. My concern would be that I think we agree. You want, if he can't get first spot overall, and that's going to be hard to get, you want second spot overall.
You do.
And I would like another ball handler.
Be nice.
I would like, and the thing is, where the Raptors are now, and this is not a criticism, but as long as Boston is pushing them, they're not going to be able to, I don't think, have a lot of nights where you've got to, where you take a big drop off because you are resting Fred or you are resting Kyle. You really need somebody who could kind of fill in. Yeah, I don't know. Isaiah Thomas is a name that was that's out there. And I have no idea if they would be interested in him at all.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, as much as he wasn't a factor last year, I understood why they had Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, the theory behind
the
it was
theory
smart.
Behind it. And I'm almost...
They still need that guy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm almost there now as well.
Yeah.
I understood why Jeremy Lin was... And thank God, it's to the Raptors' benefit that they didn't necessarily need to rely on him. But I like having that security blanket.
Yeah, well, you hit on something I think that's also going to be huge in the last 27 games of the postseason is... I'm not sure they can make the finals again unless OG Anunoby's an impact player.
Yeah.
If he can score and give you 15 or something like that and play good D, it literally changes everything because it gives you another place on the floor where you can score. I know Nick has praised Ibaka, and I think he'll be good, but like you do, the fact is just going to be nights matchup wise because. As much as I love him, Fred VanVleet is going to be a mismatch defensively on the wrong side, and there has to be someone else who can score. And usually that guy is going to have to be OG Anunoby.
Yeah, as to what Matt said a little earlier, I don't know if I will ever be in a position where I'd be really comfortable with OG on the court late in a game, in a close game, but I need OG to be able to give me a lot of minutes up to that point. I'm okay with that. If he can be the 3-and-D guy... who gives me minutes leading up to the last 2 minutes of a game. I'll be okay with that.
I hear what you're saying. The thing though, that he could do though, is he really is a good defender. So in just thinking about this against the really good teams, like last minute of a game and you're tied, and let's say it's Boston, like who guards Jason Tatum?
Yeah.
Like the thing is the Raptors, that's probably their best wing defender. And I'm with you. I don't think he's going to be involved in taking the final shot, but they don't really have a lot of choices other than him to play another team's best wing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think he's probably going to be on the court a lot. And then again, this gets back to something we discussed with Devlin. The whole calculus of the playoffs can change too if Pascal Siakam can become that high leverage scorer. If he can score late the way Kawhi did, they're a nightmare for teams. I love Pascal. I just don't know if he's there yet. You know what I mean? I know against Milwaukee, 90-90, Giannis guarding him. You need a bucket. I don't know if he gets that bucket yet. I don't know. I hope so, but I don't know.
Well, the last time Ren Lavoie joined us, he got in a little bit of trouble, or rather he got in a little bit of trouble with the Circuit de Quebec. For the second time, Ren Lavoie was pulled over for chatting on a device while talking to us. We will attempt to get Ren Lavoie through a Friday without running afoul of the law. Ren Lavoie will join us. You never know how this is going to turn out, folks. Don't go anywhere. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sportsnet 360.
You're experiencing Writer's Block with Jeff Blair and Richard Deitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
let's see if we can get through this without Ren Lavoie being arrested. Ren Lavoie is our NHL insider from TVS Sports. The last time we had him on, of course, he was pulled over by the Sûreté du Québec. The second time this has happened. Ren, we have some music for you. Folks, the radio station can hear this. TV people can't. It's essentially a French version of I Fought the Law and the Law Won. Although the
very impressive find by
The words are a little different. It's from 1966, so Brandeo did his research here. How you doing, Ren?
I'm pretty good, and I'm not driving, so I'm okay. So
that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was, you know, I wasn't even going to say anything. I was just hoping that you weren't driving. So that's well. No, well, but I said I wasn't going to tell him not to be driving. Travis is what I said.
But you know what? It is what it is. The good news is I'm in Ottawa already. And it's going to be an interesting, 24 to 48 hours for both teams when you're looking at it with the trading deadline looming. You see that there's a lot of activities. So it's a good time to be in Ottawa right now.
You know, the Bruins acquired Andre Kasha today, and I think a lot of us thought that the Bruins would be one of the teams that would be playing and, you know, would be involved for Chris Kreider. Does this take them out of this now, do you think? I mean, they did give up a 2020 first rounder. They've given up Axel Anderson as well. Of course, David Backes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The thing is, when you look at it, there's a lot of teams right now. And when I'm saying a lot, the majority of teams are not looking for rentals. They're looking for players with terms or maybe RFAs at the end of this season. So here you have another example right now, and you have obviously David Backes' contract moving. That doesn't mean that if Chris Kreider is available, that the Bruins are not going to make a phone call. I'm pretty sure that if Chris is available, they will. But at the same time, I think that they're working right now with the sentiment that Chris is going to stay with the New York Rangers. I do believe that tonight's game between the Rangers and the Hurricanes is a real key game. Maybe, you know, if the Rangers lose, it doesn't mean 100% that they're going to trade him. But let's say they win that game tonight. I think it changed a lot of things because they're really proud the way they're playing right now. They know that Chris Kreider is helping. Obviously, that's a team that's not supposed to make the playoffs. But, you know, it's going to be tough for management to say to the coaches and players, guys, we're not going to help you. And we're probably going to trade one of our best forward this year, Chris Kreider. And this is the end of us. I'm not convinced it's going to happen. And if I was a betting man, I'll say that Chris Kreider right now, maybe 60 to 70% chances that he's going to stay. And if they're winning tonight, like I mentioned, versus the Hurricanes, this is still a big part of the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Ren, if you had to crystal ball this, do you expect this to be a busy trade deadline day?
It will, but you've seen names today and yesterday. I don't think anybody's getting excited, right? And that's what I believe. I believe that we're going to see trades, let's say Nate Thompson is traded by the Montreal Canadiens. Are you going to be excited? I'm not convinced that you will. You have to wonder now about Jean-Gabriel Pageau, who's one of the best forward available right now, quote-unquote available, because we still don't know that he will be. It's the same thing that Chris Kreider here. They're doing some contract talks for an extension. And the good sign is, Pageau played last night. I reported on Tuesday that those talks were ongoing, and he played last night. He was not a healthy scratch, which says a lot about, I guess, where the talks are going right now. There's a good chance that he's going to stay. So let's say Kreider is staying. Let's say Pageau is staying. At one point, I mean, you have to wonder are we really going to be excited? And like I mentioned earlier, teams are looking for players with terms, but those teams are not prepared to tell us who are those players, first of all. And second of all, to have a player with terms being it's going to cost a lot. I don't believe, like, there'll be some big names, maybe a Dumba in Minnesota, think players like that. But, you know, star players, I don't believe that they're going to be traded in the next 48 hours.
Ren, as I look at the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, two of the names that have kind of intrigued me are Thomas Tatar and Max Domi. Now, I know Max Domi's an RFA, I believe, at the end of this season.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do you think there's a chance that he gets moved?
At this time of the year, I'll say no.
Okay.
Because look at how Mark Bergevin worked since he's a GM. Yes, he traded some RFAs or players with terms, but he always did it in June or maybe close to the deadline or not the deadline, the draft.
Right.
Or on July 1st. So that's the same expectation that I have right now. If Mark Bergevin wants to make a move involving a player like Max Domi, he really do believe that the maximum that you're going to get in return is really during springtime or early summertime. And I believe that this strategy for him is really working, sometimes really working for both teams. So, and if you're doing a trade like Max Domi right now being traded, is there a lot of teams that are calling for Max? I'm not 100% sure. Maybe there's some, but I'll be surprised. And I was told, Jeff, to be honest with you, 2 days ago that they're not ready to make any moves involving players like Petrie, Tatar, or Max Domi. So, but I'm not saying 100% that Max is not going to be traded. I don't have a crystal ball in front of me, and we'll see. We'll see how it's going to happen with him. Not convinced, too, that he's going to start next season with the Canadiens, but that's I guess, a story for another moment right now.
Ren, you no doubt saw the result of the Maple Leaf Penguins game yesterday. It's obviously been a big talking point in this city. What do you make of what we saw last night? Because I think it's fair to say it's either the most complete game the Maple Leafs have played. If not, it's certainly sort of in the top three. And it gives you a glimpse of what they could be. At the same time, we have not seen this hardly at all this year. What'd you make of last night?
Well, it's a good time to see that. And it's the right time of the year. And they need to build on this one. I think the loss earlier this week versus Pittsburgh was more than a slap in the face. It was a punch in the face. And I really like the reaction of the leaders of this group, especially Austin Matthews. And if we go back to September when we had conversation about who should be the next captain, I always believe that Austin Matthews is captain-like. And by saying that, I'm not saying that John Tavares is not a captain. Captains need help. And the fact that Austin is reacting this way, even if he's still at a young age, for me, it says a lot. And people are listening. And hopefully, that's one of the reasons why. When you're looking at the way the leaders played that game last night, you know, I don't want to excuse anybody here, but I look at the Capitals last night losing versus the Montreal Canadiens. And then there's a sense that around the league that the Capitals right now are not trending in the right direction and everybody's panicking. Come on. They're not, they're looking at their schedule and they're like, oh my God, when are the playoffs are going to start? Mm-hmm. If you're looking, let's be honest here. If you're looking at the Atlantic division, this is a really weak division. Like it's scary how weak this division is. You're going to say, well, come on. The Maple Leafs are battling right now with the Panthers for a playoff spot. Yes, there'll be only three teams from that division making the playoffs. And it's going to be between the Panthers and now the Maple Leafs for the last spot. That's the way I see it. Normally, the Montreal Canadiens should have been there, but maybe the Buffalo Sabres should have been there. They're not. They're not even close. So, I guess it's, in a way, easy for some Maple Leafs players to say, who are we battling against right now? Is there a sense of urgency that we need? Not necessarily. You don't see it. So that's the difference between teams like Boston and Tampa. They're built with veterans players. They know how to win, okay? And Toronto is learning how to win right now. And if you think that Boston or Tampa didn't go through what Toronto is going through right now, it's a mistake. They're all going through the same transition. And if the Toronto Maple Leafs lost that game 4-0 last night, I think you and every Toronto Maple Leafs fan should have been really worried about what's coming. But now I'm pretty sure the battle between the Panthers and the Maple Leafs probably is going to end somewhere, I guess, late March or early April. That's the way I see it, to be honest with you.
What would you expect from the Panthers at the deadline? Because they lost to L.A. last night after winning the night before. What would you expect from them?
That's a great question, because I'm telling you, there's a lot of people upset in Florida right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you have a new coach. You paid big bucks for Bobrovsky. I know the sentiment was not on the management side really, really positive at one point regarding Sergei Bobrovsky. I think he's playing a little better right now. I think the team in general is playing a little better. But they need to be better defensively. And as much as you like defensemen like Aaron Ekblad and Keith Yandel, I know they're playing big minutes, but you have to expect more from them. And I guess there's still some disappointment there. So that's why those rumors this week involving Vincent Trocheck were really interesting. You have a guy here, he's UFA in 4 years, so it's not going to be tomorrow. And it's the type of sentiment that can help a lot of teams. And I'm surprised that we're mentioning his name. I understand he's not having the season that he's supposed to, but there was a lot of injuries involving him the last few years. And I guess he's going to come back to the playing level that he's supposed to. If they want to get a good defenseman in return, no problem. But who's going to be that defenseman that teams are going to throw at you just for the sake of it? Maybe a team like Carolina, they have tons of defensemen, but they're certainly not going to help the Florida Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look in the Western Conference, and it's a trade that I don't really see, to be honest with you right now. But if I'm a GM and I see Vincent Trocheck name being out there, and I know the Panthers are not shopping him, but you can get that guy, I'm pretty sure right now, and you're not going to pay a real premium, which is really the temptation must be really, really high to make a move involving him.
Ren, we've talked a lot so far about the Eastern Conference, not as much about the Western Conference. I'm kind of fascinated by how Edmonton has played in the last couple of weeks. What's your thought on them?
Easy. It's so easy. It's that rivalry with the Flames, the Calgary Flames. It's Matthew Tkachuk, a player that I really like, just sparked that team. That's the way I see it. I was in Edmonton for two games in December versus the Pittsburgh Penguins. Even if I was between the bench and I was looking at the Pittsburgh Penguin teams, and I've been around that team for a long time over the years, and I couldn't recognize half of those players.
Mm.
And they easily beat the Edmonton Oilers. So the next night they were playing Montreal, and Montreal lost that game. But I mean, there was nothing there. I mean, I felt the team had no energy, and I'm talking about the Oilers. I felt like there was the vibe was not really positive, and it changed. Everything changed in somewhere in January, and that's the way I see it. When a team is playing like a team, when you're playing for the guy next to you, that's when things are going well. And they needed absolutely something like the, you know, what happened with the Calgary Flames to just spark that team and just to make sure that they're all going in the same direction. And that's what I'm seeing right now. Dangerous team. We did the game on Wednesday between the Boston Bruins and the Oilers. And I know it was in Edmonton, but I think, you know, when you look at the number of players that were injured, it was kind of scary for Edmonton. And they didn't get, you know, they lost 2-1 in overtime. I mean, they should be really happy with what they did versus one of the best teams in the NHL, the Boston Bruins. With all the injured players, when that team is going to be healthy, this is going to be a dangerous team, I'm pretty sure.
Ren, what are you expecting from the Winnipeg Jets? They seem to have made their major acquisition with DeMello. But is there anything else you expect to see from them?
Well, what's going to happen with Dustin Byfuglien is really what you need to look at. Well, I've been told that Dustin doesn't want to play this year.
Mm-hmm.
So can he change his mind? And if he changes his mind, he's not going to be ready really before at least a month and maybe the start of the playoffs. What kind of trade you can make not knowing exactly what the player is going to do? I don't see Dustin being traded, but maybe a GM can be excited and make a move just to take a risk or a chance, but I don't know. It's we're all waiting for this situation to be resolved. I do believe they should get another forward. I'm not talking here about you know, a star player, but maybe a third liner or maybe a fourth liner. Mathieu Perreault is still injured, so you need bodies because when the playoff starts, you know how it is. You're going to start your playoffs with a roster, and that roster is going to change, and it's not going to be the same roster by the end of your playoff run if your playoff run is a long one. So I do believe they need more depth offensively. Defensively, obviously, it's easy to say, but they'll make some moves. Not major moves, but they'll make some, I'm sure.
Ren, great to join us as always. Thanks so much. Should be a fascinating 72 to 48 hours.
Enjoy your weekend. Take care.
Thanks, Ren.
That's Ren LaVar, NHL insider with JVS Sports. And we got him through without any apparent issues.
Any incidents.
A reminder that our Hockey Central trade deadline Monday on Sportsnet Ontario begins at 8 a.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Of course, throughout all our shows on Sportsnet 590, The Fan will have you covered. Coverage includes Jeff Merrick, David Amber, Carolyn Cameron, Kelly Rudy, Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnson, Anthony Stewart, Eric Francis, Louis DeBrusque, Colby Armstrong, Kevin Bieksa, Ryan Kessler, Bruce Boudreaux, Gabby is going to be part of the crew, Christopher Stieg, Paul Bissonnette, and of course, Steve Dangle providing his... Of course, Steve Dangle. Full day coverage will be also available, as I mentioned, on the radio station. That includes Writer's Block with Blair Brunt and, for one time only, Gord Stellick. Live from the Hockey Central studios. We'll be down at the CBC.
Oh, that's exciting.
No, it's not. But we'll be down at the CBC. And there you go. So that'll be starting at 8 o'clock on Monday. And light a candle for us today. Hope like hell that there are lots of trades, because if there isn't, it's going to be a lot of wheels.
I'll be listening. I'll tell you that.
No, you won't.
Absolutely, I will.
BS.
Love monitoring the show.
It's fun. BS. Listen to it.
I'll be there. I'll be streaming it.
Don't believe you'll be listening to it for a second. But anyhow, it's nice of you to say that.
You're welcome.
I appreciate the sentiment.
Okay.
We may call you up and have you on.
We may call
you up because you're going to be listening. If you're listening to the show... We'll just call you up and have you on.
Because I believe
we're going to be filling our ass here.
I'm the first to admit you can find better guests than me on that day.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm telling you. There's going to be a lot of filling going on there. A lot of filling.
Dangle. Dangle, Blair, Brunt, and Stelic.
No, Dangle's not going to be on with us. He's part of the... although I did notice that they put his name at the very end of the...
Yeah, I just noticed that too. Why is that? That sounds like... That's unfair to Steve.
It could be Travis's doing. Yeah, you... Travis...
Travis saying... I think Travis just said he did the list.
I did curate that list myself, but he was on the end of the list provided as well.
Okay.
Okay.
So he was like the dangling participle, you could say.
Ooh, look at that. How come Marek is ahead of Amber alphabetically, Travis? I don't see
it. It's obviously not done alphabetically. Cameron, Rudy, Friedman. So Friedman would be ahead of Rudy, right?
Yes, right, right.
Yeah, so it's not
right,
Francis. Come on.
DeBrusque. Okay, DeBrusque.
Come on. Colby Armstrong. What?
What I'm getting to is that Travis clearly has curated this with his own power rankings.
Well, he did. These are his own power rankings. These are indeed his own power rankings. Dangle being essentially the most powerless of the group.
All right.
But...
Paul Bissonnette?
Yeah.
Spitting chiclets.
Yeah, get the lawyers ready. Again, full day coverage will start at 8 a.m. And we will be on the air from the Hockey Central studios at the CBC, Blair Brunt and Gord Stelic, as the NHL trade deadline. Well, it'll expire while we're on air. Hopefully we won't expire along with it.
I bet you get it. You get a late trade announced, though, that you guys will be able to talk about.
Hopefully. Pete Walker is the pitching coach of the Toronto Blue Jays. They will start their Grapefruit League schedule tomorrow. Trent Thornton on the mound against the Yankees, against Jay Happ. I wonder, with all the talk about sign stealing, I understand that the commissioner has taken, has punished the Astros, will punish the Boston Red Sox. I wonder, though, even with all this, if there isn't a greater emphasis being put this spring on protecting your signs, just in case. I mean, it is the type of thing you'd work on in spring training. We'll find out. We'll talk to Pete Walker about that. Are the Jays involved in some counter-espionage?
Hmm.
Pete Walker's next. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, a reminder, the Toronto Blue Jays start their Grapefruit League schedule Saturday in Tampa against the New York Yankees. Trent Thornton will be on the mound for the Blue Jays. Jay Happ for the Yankees. And a first pitch will be at 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And where are we? We got so many pieces of paper. Sportsnet Ontario as well. The Jays will be in Minnesota to take on, or in Fort Myers to take on the Twins Sunday. And as we mentioned, as the Grapefruit League season starts in full, there will be a lot of focus on Hyunjin Ryu. Of course, the entire spring, there's going to be a lot of focus on Hyunjin Ryu. He will start Thursday. And you heard Shai Davidi before, or in the last hour, talk about sort of the show that is Hyunjin Ryu, the number of reporters that are around that follow his every move. And it's going to be a fascinating subplot to the 2020 season, just seeing how everybody reacts to that. Pete Walker is the Blue Jays pitching coach. He is the man who will, of course, be the point person with Hyunjin Ryu. And Pete Walker joins us on Writer's Block. Pete, as always, it's great to talk to you. I know it's early days still, and we haven't seen Hyunjin pitch in a Grapefruit League game, but from what you have been able to tell, in terms of how he likes to go about preparing, in sort of some of his ideas about what he needs to do to get ready for games, how different is what he does from what most pitchers will do?
Well, it's great to be here with you guys again. I'm excited about spring and the season to come, so it's great talking to you guys. He's been awesome. Obviously, coming from the Dodgers, he's been acclimated to the big leagues and the routine and you know, so really coming to a new team, it's really getting familiar with him, as well as, you know, Rio getting familiar with his teammates and the staff and his surroundings here. That's the biggest initial challenge, right, to get to that comfort level where he can just go out and perform. So, you know, his most comfortable place will be on the mound. And, you know, the sooner we get him out there and in a spring training game, I think everything will start falling into place for him. But so far it's been an easy transition. He's super easy to work with, very cordial guy, intellectual. He's into the analytics, and it's exciting to have him here for sure.
Pete, as specific as you can, how does your job change when you have experienced pitchers like Ryu, Rourke, Chase Anderson, et cetera, versus what you had last year? I'm just sort of curious how your job changes on a day-to-day.
Well, obviously, you got to do a little bit more work in the off season preparing because they're new to the organization, they're new to you, so the familiarity issue is you know something that you got to take care of initially. You know, studying what they like to do, and then obviously getting the catchers all on board. You know, when you have pitchers that are in an organization for a while, it's a little bit easier for the catchers because year to year they kind of have an understanding of what those guys do. So, you know, they seem to be a quick study. They're all, you know, the new additions so far are guys that are students of the game. They understand what they need to do to be successful. So it's easier to pass along because they have a little bit of a track record. So the biggest challenge is really, you know, making sure the catchers are on board and understand exactly what those pitchers want to do and what we want to accomplish to be successful. So that's really where spring training, you know, comes in handy. You know, having that time to get together, especially when you're with a new team. And, you know, we'll have meetings post-game to discuss how the game went and things that we could do differently. And the pitchers have input in that as well. So it's really, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge, but it's a good challenge when you have these kind of pitchers coming into your camp.
Now, I know that Nate Pearson faced live hitters today in throwing live batting practice, one of them being Vladdy Jr. Look, we know about Nate Pearson, you know, the guy who apparently has said he wants to throw 110 miles an hour at some point. How do you go about harnessing that, Pete, and sort of ensuring that, you know, when that comes, it's going to come, but don't hurt yourself trying to reach that level?
Yeah, I don't think that's a concern. He is very under control for a strong kid, for a young pitcher with that kind of explosiveness. His delivery is outstanding. He generates so much velocity. It's incredible, but it's not forced. It's not like it's out of control. It's really impressive. It's kind of a controlled aggression. You know, he threw live batting practice today, and the ball just jumps out of his hand. You know, the remarks from Vladdy and Grishik and the guys that faced him, you know, you can just see it in their eyes when they come back. It's like that ball just gets on you. So, you know, yeah, he's excited. I mean, there's going to be times when, you know, I'm sure he'll have to talk about just pitching. He has the ability to throw so darn hard, you know, that it's hard to control that sometimes. But he is a true professional for a young kid. He goes about his business the right way. He has a game plan every day. He looks to get better, which is amazing. He is really exciting. And just watching him pitch today, obviously, you can feel the excitement around him. When major league hitters come away kind of shaking their head like, wow, you know we have something special.
You know, we've seen this front office and this management team handle young position players, right? We saw the way Vladdy came up. Yep. We saw Cavan, you know, certainly Bo as well. This is a little different with the starting pitcher. Do you have any idea or, you know, without giving away state secrets, kind of explain to us what the overarching philosophy would be about developing this guy and when we might see him in the majors or what he has to do in order to get to the majors?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's still developing in a way. I mean, obviously you could probably throw him out there and he'd be fine, he'd survive, but he's still working on his curveball a little bit, refining that. He spent a lot of time this offseason there. The changeup is still a little bit of a work in progress. Obviously, with that kind of fastball, he could come up and survive right now. But you want him, when he gets there, to feel really good about everything, and he's pretty darn close right now. From an inning standpoint, I certainly wouldn't want to get into a number.
Mm-hmm.
He's the kind of kid that, you know, we'll start the year in AAA. We'll get his innings. We'll pitch on a regular basis. will learn how to compete and win, which I think is extremely important, without limiting innings and you know keeping them on a regular routine and taking them out after one or two innings just so we're worried about pitch count. He's at the point in his career where he has to go out there and compete and feel like he can compete and win a ball game, because ultimately that's what we want. So, you know, I think the days of really limiting innings and so forth is changing, and I think we're I think we have some cutting edge ideas which are exciting, and I'm excited about his year. So really, it's going to depend on him, how he bounces back, how he handles outing to outing, and we have plenty of ways to check that and stay on top of that.
Pete, professional sports can be a paranoid place, and quite frankly, at times, rightly so. How often will you be discussing sign stealing during the spring?
Well, we've always discussed it. So there's really, honestly, there's nothing new. It's always been a thorn in my side over the years, and something that we've always, you know, trying to find ways to combat it. You know, whether it was happening or wasn't happening, we always had a suspicion. So, you know, we were always conscious of that. You know, and I think it's just something that it's really no different than any other year. You know, you hope that it stops, but still, you're gonna have plenty of sets of signs, different ways to cover them up, and you know, because it's gonna be a concern for a long time. So, you know, obviously it came to the forefront in Houston and a little in Boston, I guess. But we've always had our suspicions, and you know, you can never be too careful. So. It's really going to be no different than any other year, and we're just going to continue to have our different methods of combating it.
Now, Pete, you've got Danny Jansen and Reese McGuire. They're two guys who are coming back from the team, from last year's team. Are they able to play more of a role now this spring along with you in dealing with the pitchers than perhaps last spring? Because, you know, Danny's got a gold glove. I mean, he's got a year underneath his belt, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And I think those guys are awesome. With the addition of Caleb Joseph as well.
Sure.
Who, you know, I've admired, you know, the way he catches and receives and throws and when he was with Baltimore especially. You know, so it's kind of a, you know, he gives us some depth for sure. But obviously Reese and Danny, you know, with a lot of experience now, especially Danny all year and what he's done, and he's learned to really control the game, slow the game down. I think, you know, your first year in the big leagues, things get fast, and it's hard for a young catcher to slow a pitcher down or even slow himself down. So I think he's learned how to do that, and I think, you know, you'll see a different player this year, not only from a leadership standpoint, someone who can take control of a game, but I think his offense will be a lot better as well. I know he finished up strong last year, but I think he's in a different place. Physically, he looks great, and I think he's going to be ready to really lead this team.
Pete, I think a lot of Blue Jays fans are curious to get your thoughts on what you think the bridge might be to Ken Giles. Very clearly, you have your closer, but there'll be a lot of conversations and probably a lot of work this year in terms of who might be the seventh and eighth inning guys.
Yeah, we've been fortunate. You know, I got to be honest with you. The front office, you know, we've all taken heat at times, and you know, because of not signing the big name relievers, but we seem to have done a great job. With those additions, whether they're non-roster guys, guys we pick up on waivers, and we've really put it together the last few years and bridged the gap. But I especially think this year the guys we brought in are kind of under the radar. Delise, you know, for $1 million from Japan, one of the best relievers in Japan. He is a big guy, and I saw him throw for the first time live yesterday, and it was coming out. You know, he's got a mid-90s to high-90s fastball, the nasty split. He's very composed. So he's certainly one guy that's going to be pitching those innings. Anthony Bass out of Seattle, who pitched a number of high-leverage innings in Seattle. Somehow we got on waivers. I don't know how that happened, but he's in our camp, and he's a big part of our bullpen. And obviously with Yamaguchi, whether he's in the rotation or he's in the bullpen, he's another guy that can pitch at the end of the game. So I'm actually, you know, probably as excited about the back end of the bullpen as I have been in a long time. These guys, if they do what I think they can do, they are very, I would say it's a sleeper bullpen, and I'm real excited about them.
Hey, Pete, it was great to talk to you, man. I know it's long days at spring training. Thanks so much, and we'll see you down there.
Thanks, Pete.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Take care. Pete Walker, Blue Jays pitching coach. Again, the Jays and the Yankees, 12:30 p.m. Pregame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. First pitch at 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1. That is tomorrow against the Yankees. Sunday in Fort Myers to take on my Minnesota Twins. Anthony Kay against Jose Berrios. 12:30 p.m. pregame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 1 o'clock first pitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sportsnet Ontario, who knows? And we may see Mr. Josh Donaldson in the lineup for the Minnesota Twins on Sunday, although it's early days in spring training, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. You never know when the veterans are going to play, but I would imagine there is a chance to see Josh Donaldson in a Twins uniform, which will be all sorts of cool, especially since the games won't matter. Make a bit of a difference if the games mattered.
You know, Pete Walker has me a little more excited about the back end of the bullpen than I was prior to that interview. By the way, you as a baseball head, you may have known this guy, but I didn't know anything about Dolis until I just read about him recently.
There's not enough time. I don't have enough time in my life to pay attention to anything Japanese that goes baseball. On in Japanese yeah. baseball. Stories.
I'll be curious to see what kind of what kind of stuff this guy has when he goes against some MLB guys in spring training.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
It's okay. All this stuff, Jeff, as you know, these lottery ticket types of plays, there's no downside to them at all. A million bucks is nothing.
I will be worried about middle relief at the end of spring training. Every year we talk about.
You consider eighth inning middle or no? Like,
seventh, eighth, any of that. Like, I don't worry about it until the end of spring because every year. Somebody comes out of camp and you go, where the hell did that come from?
Right, right.
And last year, Daniel Hudson signed at the end of spring training. I just, with all due respect to everybody, I don't give a rat's ass about middle relief until the season starts. The only issue I have with it is it can make for some long days in spring training when innings that should be over quickly suddenly go on for half an hour because nobody can get anybody out. But, in this day and age of analytics, you're going to find somebody who's going to fill the middle relief role. Giles is there at the end. Giles is a workhorse. Maybe they need somebody else to fill in the odd time. But, yeah, I don't worry about middle relief until the homestand that starts the regular season. At that point, if you're scuffling, you're concerned. But at this point, they'll find somebody. They always do.
Yeah, and Daniel Hudson turned out to. I mean,
well, he was a can't miss. I mean,
nice find and or nice signing, and then obviously last out of the World Series, right? For yep. Daniel Hudson, okay.
The NFL Players Association and the NFL were supposedly going to have an agreement, not look like it. Adam Schefter reporting that. The players said, we're not ready to sign this yet. We'd like to go back and do some negotiating. The owners, of course, being the kind souls that they are, said, screw you. So we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll take a look at a little bit of the NFL negotiations and get you set for our good friends, Tim and Sid. It's Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360.
Now, more Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, let's take it to the stage. Bring it up, pull it down. Bring it up, pull it down.
Everybody. All right, so the NFL and the in their dreams, I guess, wanted to have a new CBA signed or almost done today. There was a lot of optimism yesterday, Richard, about the CBA being done until the players read it and said, what the hell? And according to Adam Schefter and other reporters, the players just said, we're not going to sign this pile of poo right now. And the owners have basically said, well, that's sort of our best pile of poo.
Yeah, it won't be. The person I recommend on this, and there's probably a lot of really smart people, but Andrew Brandt, is a former Packers executive, former player.
I asked you this. Is he related to Gil?
He's not.
He's not. Okay.
Maybe they're distant cousins, but I don't think so. They're certainly not father, son, or anything.
Right.
So if you're on Twitter, I would just go to his feed. And one of the things he's saying, he's really smart, is that the NFL Players Association is in a better position than they realize. One of the things that the owners have to have is they have to have labor peace to make the argument to the networks to give them their 40% sure. or 50% raise. Like, what the networks have to know is, like, there's going to be
there's
a season.
There's going to be product, right.
There's going to be product. We can inventory it. We can schedule it. And that can't happen, obviously, without the players. The other thing Brand is bringing up, I think this is really smart, I actually didn't realize until he was saying it, is the players should be very, very wary of signing a 10-year deal, which I'm, and again, I'm no labor expert, but like, you have seen so many new sources of revenue in professional sports, you know, the internet yeah. and audio
gambling
and streaming,
and
gambling,
right.
data. Is so much money. That strikes me as, again, like, they should not, the players should take their time on this, because I think they can get a better deal than they think. And two, to me, Jeff, the shorter the deal for them, the better, because you have no idea what new revenue stream is going to be invented tomorrow. For all we know, like, I mean, this is probably not going to happen, but like, what happens if all of a sudden, like, virtual reality, mm-hmm. like, the public falls in love with it, it becomes incredibly cheap, and people are willing to pay, I'm making this up, it's not going to happen, but like, $80 so you can put on some kind of headset,
yeah, your point
and
is
you can be in the middle of the game.
Yeah,
you know
we don't know where technology is going to be
correct.
3 years down the road, let alone 10.
So,
and I don't know why you'd want to commit to a 10-year. Has any sports league ever committed to a 10-year contract?
I don't think so. That seems crazy. And I, the last thing I would say on this is, the giving the 17th game is huge.
Yes.
Like they should hold out for whatever they need to get, because that is a game changer for the owners, and it's the players who are giving up their bodies, not the owners.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and we've already, you know, we said this, just a reminder every time we talk about NFL contracts and the NFL Players Association, their contracts aren't guaranteed. And that's something that, you know, for the life of me, and look, I understand. Football players have maybe the least amount of bargaining power of any. I mean, they're, you know, a 6'5", 400-pound offensive lineman or whatever. They can find another 6'5", 400-pound offensive lineman, whatever. They've got the worst contracts. They've got very little leverage. But I'm with you here. If I'm them, I'm not committing to 10 years. Yeah. And, you know, to my way of thinking, if you want 17 games, then you've got to give me something in return.
And the last thing, and this is reality, I understand hockey is also a dangerous sport, but that's the one sport of the four major sports where you literally, Jeff, may be giving up years of your
yes.
life to play the game.
Absolutely.
Baseball player retires, you keep yourself in shape, you're living to 60, 70, 80 years
old. Your chance of a catastrophic injury.
Correct.
A life-altering injury in football.
Even the best of these guys. Like, watch these guys when all those Hall of Famers walk on the field
yep.
during semis, they limping.
Yeah.
So, like, I hope they get more than what seems to be offered.
Yeah, and you know, kudos to them for playing hardball. I found it really odd yesterday when, you know, everybody seemed to be operating under the assumption this is going to be done, because I was thinking that would be one of the quickest labor negotiations I've seen. So.
Plus, I don't like NFL owners, so I would like them to stick it to them as good
absolutely.
As they can.
Sir Deitch, you will be back in a week's time.
Yes, sir.
You will be listening along with the masses Monday.
Have a great hockey trade deadline day.
Oh, I tell you, I can't wait for it. It'll be Stephen Brent, Gord Stellick, and myself. We'll be at the Hockey Central Studios if they'll have us Monday, NHL trade deadline day. We can all go back to living after Monday. Have a great weekend. Tim and Sid are next. Chris Johnson in studio. The lovely and talented Kendrick Perkins as well. Have a great weekend. Don't forget, Jays baseball returns. Grapefruit League action Saturday and Sunday. See ya.